Welcome to CVM Stories, the podcast on customer value management. Together, we explore how companies can be more successful and the customers happier through the use of latest customer value management techniques. Learn key commercial and analytical insights from telecoms, retail, finance, and other industries that drive CVM forward. Hi, I'm your host, Sharunas. Our guest today is Ignas Brazdauskas. Ignas recently finished a gig at Ooredoo Qatar as a marketing director. He's done some amazing customer value management work in the telecoms, and I'm really happy to have him here. CVM Stories is produced by Exacaster. We help companies take their customer value management to the next level. To stay updated on our latest episodes, subscribe to the podcast or sign up for an email newsletter at exacaster.com/CVM Stories. So, Ignas, welcome.
Good to be back.
Yeah, very nice to see you after some 2 years maybe, right?
Yeah.
So your LinkedIn says that you are in travel mode. From where to where?
Now currently I'm traveling in Lithuania.
Okay.
So it's been a great 2 years. I left Lithuania in 2021. And I would say I'm still in traveling mode since then, but I spent most of it in Qatar.
Okay.
I spent 1.5 years in the Middle East. And then last almost 5 months, I would say, we are on our suitcase. So we've been traveling all the world with our family.
Okay,
and we came here for quite a short time. So it's a good to be back. I think it's still, you know, it's home, right?
So yeah. But I think you managed to hit the football season, right?
Yeah.
During your career in Qatar. So maybe you can tell a little bit Qatar before football, during football, and after football.
Well, when I came to Qatar, it was already football because all the preparations, including Arab Cup, the country's been living the football for last 1 year.
Okay.
It's been amazing, and we were really lucky. So because it came to our yard, and it was great supplementary experience to what we already experienced in Middle East.
It's sort of like maybe the Olympics coming to
town. I think it's bigger. Olympics is a little scattered to me because there you have different types of sports, and here everything was about football. You've been breathing football basically, and all the fans. I think football has the biggest support across the globe, and having that in such a small piece of land, I would say, it's amazing. The biggest distance between the stadiums were like 30 kilometers away. Okay. So it's basically you can travel half an hour.
Moving to the next,
and you definitely are in the stadium. You were lucky to visit a lot, and I was really grateful and thankful to have this as an experience.
Yeah, so I think good timing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about. Customer value management. So you have been kind of very active in this area for many years. I don't know how many years, 10 years or more maybe, right?
Yeah.
But let's start off with definitions, because what is customer value management? Many people call it different things, you know, customer base management, segment management, retention management, and lots of words. So could you define what it is in your opinion?
Yeah. Really broad perspective to me what value is, right? So value is to create something. I actually even draw some triangle ones to kind of define what value is, just to make it simple to explain. So it's about the speed, about the quality, and about the price.
Okay.
And everything in between this triangle is more of this plot of
and
of
by speed you're saying
is how fast you can deliver to the customer.
Okay.
I'm not talking internally, but like the value to the customer is how cheap you can be, how fast you can be to deliver a new product or to deliver some offer to him. And how quality is it in terms of, you know, the product, in terms of network, in terms of your customer experience. So this is something in between that if you're faster a little bit, if you're better, or if you're cheaper a little bit, then it's more value for the customer.
So that's a really, really broad definition.
Yeah, it's really broad. And when it comes to CVM exactly, it's more how can you bring more value to the customer? Usually is how can you tweak the price a little bit, how you can be faster versus your competition, and how can you be better in terms of your product experience in order to, you know, win this customer. So customers are always choosing according to the value. Lithuania, I think, is one of the best examples to it. And but it goes across. I think it's something how you are enabling your customer to be with you. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to your practice and your activities, I think CVM is usually about two things, right? Is how precise you can be with the price point and the product, mm-hmm. and how fast you are able to deliver that, how agile you are to execute, right? Mm-hmm. It's and of course then data is something that you will be able to you know make your decisions based upon. Mm-hmm. I think this is you know, the data itself lies everywhere beneath, right?
Supporting all the pillars,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, it's these are all the pillars to me, but specifically when it comes to the price point, because this is the quickest thing to change, but mm-hmm. also the hardest thing to change, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Because it does contain lots of sensitivity around.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Can you answer one question about importance of CVM? Because sometimes it seems not so important. You are tweaking small things, as you even use the word tweaking.
Yeah.
But is this important nowadays in the telecom world or not?
Definitely. I think when I've seen lots of different telcos, from some of them more from the outside world. Mm-hmm. I think when I see CVM in the structure, it's sometimes underneath somewhat.
In the organizational
product,
structure.
Under marketing, mm-hmm. under customer care even, right? Mm-hmm. So most of these cases, it doesn't have enough of the daylight and enough of, you know, the trees are a little bit below of what the beauty is. And I think there's lots of beauty in it. And if you ask me what CVM importance is, I would say it should be a P&L. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you name one piece of organization that would be able to, you know, go through the whole P&L, mm-hmm. and I'm talking customer value here, how much do we gain from the customer, how mm-hmm. much do we spend for that customer, mm-hmm. I think this is the only unit that will have the sole responsibility and we will be able to understand exactly what's happening within mm-hmm. this specific customer, right? Mm-hmm. Overall, broad base, of course, financial reports would do the fit. But when it comes to mm-hmm. detailed level and more of the action level, CVM is the only part of the organization.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think this is really important to make this voice louder. And mm-hmm. I was lucky to do so in my previous stint, so mm-hmm. it came basically to the C level.
Mm-hmm. So basically reporting at the executive level as a standalone
department. Even though I had different responsibilities, mm-hmm. over there, both in Lithuania and also in Qatar, I think the biggest achievement for us that it did have all the top management attention. Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting that you kind of bring it up this way, because it's quite common to structure products as P&L, and you have some product director supervising all of those. But product is only, one small angle, right?
It should be customer P&L.
But what you're saying is like a segment P&L or like a customer group P&L is another angle that is crucial.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that requires a little bit of the ownership. And, mm-hmm. Maybe if you go a little bit deeper, right? The trick here is like the CVM itself is really complex, right? You have to know the data part, right? You, mm-hmm. you simply need to execute on that level. But there's also marketing that comes on top of it. What shall we do about mm-hmm. this? What are the insights that we got from the data that we want to execute on? Mm-hmm. So that's already a complex part. And mm-hmm. usually people in CVM are coming from the data background, mm-hmm. right? So of course you cannot, make some cliche on that side, but usually if you're really strong in data, then most likely you are a little weaker in the other parts.
Yeah.
And to have that, mix of features in one person does require, a lot of effort to find one.
Yeah.
Which then to put him also on top of P&L is something that really not too many people would like to do, because if I am really good at data insights, I will be digging into the customer insights and I'll be happy to do so.
Kind of hard to cross into this business ownership.
Yes. Yeah, this business ownership is something that would make one successful. Mm-hmm. And this is how you get CVM voice into know, broader parts of the organization. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Maybe you can comment a little bit on the relationship between customer value management and marketing, because this is depending on how which framework you use, it's either part of it or beside it. So how do
it you is see marketing. It is marketing. Yeah, it is marketing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think when it comes to marketing, it's a really broad definition of what marketing is. For some, it's a brand. For some, it's a marketing, like, you know,
communication,
PR, you name it, right?
Yeah.
And I think that in a company, in a corporate world, usually there are two marketing guys. One is more of a brand guy.
Yeah.
And the other one is more of CVM.
Okay. Yeah. So you kind of say that the modern marketing job is actually split into two roles.
Yeah.
And the CVM is more the data-driven kind of customer, kind of upselling, cross-selling, retaining focus.
Yeah.
The other one is more acquisition and the general.
It's not only, I think CVM does play a big part in acquisition as well.
Okay.
Usually it's about retention, but I am a big fan about, first of all, to put the ATL pricing where it should be.
And then
you know what is your field work, basically.
Yeah,
because if your ATL pricing is, you know, too good to be true, then CVM would not
then your CVM suffers.
Sense.
Okay.
When it comes to marketing itself, I mean, it's again about the type of people that we have. And I think it's equally important to have some creative mind that would enable you to, you know, think more of out of the box type of thing and be more visible and be more bold. When it comes to CVM, there are lots of nitty-gritties, right? There are lots of things that you are not even showing for the public in order to make your P&L better, right? So when it comes to organizations like big ones above 100 or 1,000 or 2,000 people, definitely there will be someone who will be driving more of a brand type of communication. And there will be someone who will be driving all the products type of communication. I would be even deeper, more of the CVM type of thing, right? And CVM is something that, it's again marketing. It's about the price, it's about the product, it's about the
distribution.
When and how it's going to be sold, right?
Yeah, so I think we touched one topic, maybe we can develop it now. It's about the ideal team structure. So we touched about where CVM should be reporting and how the split between marketing, let's say the one type of marketing versus the other. Let's talk a little bit about how do you structure the team inside the CVM function, what they should be responsible for. So is it like one segment ideally or multiple segments? What's your advice there?
It really depends on the size, because if you're in a startup, then that's one thing. If you're talking telcos, of course, then my goal, I'm not talking about the size, right? Because size can differ. And I would be thinking about segments anyway, because someone who is responsible for a particular customer base should understand that customer base. I'm not even talking data, but you need to feel, you need to basically touch the customer to make sure that your insights coming from the data are something that's really a reality and not, not something that you just created by your own. When you have that segment, within that segment, I'm a big fan to have basically a data guy who will be driving the campaigns. And when it comes to campaign itself, so if you can go to a detailed segment level, or for example, on the part of the framework, when you want to upsell, when you want to retain and want to improve the customer experience, then usually you want someone to be on top of that framework. And then if you are big enough, then you might be segmenting that in terms of smaller segments. And if it's a, you know, it's a newly acquired customer, so if it's a mature customer.
Sort of by life cycle.
It's life cycle plus the approach in terms of what kind of activities you want to do with that certain customer. I really think that someone who is doing the campaign should be able also to, you know, play around with the data.
So like hands-on data.
It's a hands-on
advocate.
And I've seen campaign managers sitting outside of this data world, so it's more of the execution part. But I really think that it should be someone who should be responsible end to end, and he'll be able to follow up that to you know, P&L again to, for the post campaigns.
As a whole team, basically.
Yeah, and
P&L.
And so someone senior who knows inside out can help guide and can help. It's more of a mentoring type of thing, saying, did you did you consider that data point, or can we tweak a little bit on the product side, or can we do something about the overall customer experience? Is someone who will be more of a mentor type of thing, but the idea should be coming from the guys who are actually dealing with the campaigns on a daily level.
What's the smallest size you think is practically usable? Can it be one person doing both data and campaigns, or is this
I've been there.
Yeah, okay.
I've been there. But ultimately, I think it should be at least three people to make it a proper.
Sort of the strategist, the more data focus, and then more execution but campaigns.
But when it comes to scale, and of course, if you're having ideal infrastructure in terms of how you process the data and how you're able to automate that, in some cases it might be even enough. But knowing from where the telcos are coming from, usually there are lots of legacy and lots of data modeling that can be done beforehand in order to make the campaign happen.
Okay, so that's very useful guidance, I think, for others who may be looking to build the function or rebuild it after some changes. I think it's a very nice way.
I think one important addition I would add to what the daily operations are, so there is a campaigning part of all the data analysis before and after. I think it's important to have someone who will be more of a product manager type of role,
sort of pricing even, or
I would I would think should be more of IT type of role that would enable your new ideas to make come true in more of automate fashion, right?
Sort of automation role.
Or making some links between other parts of the organization, other tools that you use. Because usually I think the problem is when you are really in the daily operations, you sometimes forget things that might deliver the value in the future, so someone would not need to repeat the same thing that you already done twice. So if you kind of distribute that as a task as a for this project management product owner, that would help a bit to make sure that it's still happening. So I'm able to continue on my my daily stuff. So it's more of a insights routine rather than making sure I'm doing the right thing on the IT part.
I think I will just comment here. We hear a lot about infrastructure operations. Then we started hearing about data operations because data breaks all the time. Then we heard about machine learning operations. Okay, that's important, but nobody is talking about CVM operations. And actually, CVM operations under it has all of these, what I just mentioned, and CVM breaks all the time. So it's a like super important role, and I think this, what you mentioned, this automation role is obviously the guy or girl to monitor CVM ops type of metrics and so on.
Yeah, and it's again more of someone who has a little more free hands from the daily routines. I mean, it definitely would have lots of things to do because CVM is never ending story when it comes to new data sources, type of models, new type of automation. But to make sure that this is actually happening while you are still continuing your own daily
business,
I think it's important. That again, it does depend on the size, but making sure that this is a separate function and separate role to be be future-proof, I would say.
That's very nice. So yeah, we dug in very deep into CVM topics. But maybe let's go a few steps back. And how did you end up in customer value management? Is this something you were planning to do while in university?
I never knew it existed.
Yes, okay. Sounds familiar.
And I think this is still a problem because no university actually trains that, right? Yes. Because it's still marketing and data altogether.
Yeah. So it's a new profession that's emerging, basically.
I came from data myself. Mm-hmm. I studied econometrics, which these days is called data science.
Okay.
I was never the best student there, but at least I think it gave me a lot to understand and gave me more of, you know, it helped me to learn a lot. Even though I might not remember all the formulas I got and all the math analysis that we are doing on the big board with the chalk, but it helped me to understand how things can be done. And after the studies, I immediately became data analyst myself in the media agency, which was the beginning of the marketing journey, I would say. And I think the media business and media planning is more of, you know, hardcore of the marketing when it comes to lots of data and figures and insights and target groups that is a little closer to what CVM marketing is.
It's a very good training ground, actually.
I believe so. Yeah. I believe so. Data might be a little different, but the mindset that you have the creative part next to you, because there's a creative agency, there's a media agency, there's a PR agency. In the regular world and digital these days as
already well. Combining the creative side with the data and how can you connect the two?
I think it's one of the best schools from the real world to make your CVM journey. When it comes to myself, so I started as a data analyst, but then I also climb up the ladder a little bit. So I've been responsible for all the new client pitches. So I was also, you know, had some experience before joining the telco to make sure I'm able to sell some stuff.
So that is very useful, management. Selling the business cases internally now.
Indeed. And this Excel and PowerPoint combination is something that is as a basic ultimately, and I was really lucky to have some experience with the coding.
Yeah.
So at least I knew what kind of person I would be looking for in my team when it comes to things that are not fitting into the Excel.
Yeah. So what was your first telco role? Was it as a data analyst, or did you already step straight into this role?
That was quite interesting, because these days we are running like hell. We are acquiring lots of new customers, and I joined as the only guy responsible for retention and data analytics.
Okay. So from day one, you are responsible for everything.
Yeah, but then you did have to prove yourself, right? Yeah. So I knew already that it's lots of value in it. When I joined, I was a little, you know, I was not sure about the telco itself, because telco was something that, you know, lots of things were happening around, and
lots of terminology
and even from employer branding perception maybe was a little, you know, I was a little cautious there. But when I saw that there is so big potential there when it comes to customer base and customer base management as a whole,
you were hooked.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe you can tell a little bit about what are the typical challenges in this role. You know, so for someone coming into it, there is all the exciting part of getting hands dirty with data, launching big things and so on. But then what is the stressful part?
You already named it.
Okay.
It's making all things together. It's getting things done through all the clutter that you have. You have too many data, basically.
Okay.
The data points that you are able to play in with telco, these are simply too many to, you know, to explore all.
So drowning in data is problem number one.
Yeah, I think drowning in data and to really identify the key things that you want to execute on is one of the first things you want to do, and then you'll come. I think lots of learning will come afterwards when you are able to measure yourself. Having the team that would fit in this role is another big challenge, and that's why I saw you have ExaCaster Academy. We had our own academy in order to make sure that we have the right skill set of the people. As nobody trains that, it's one of the key things. And I mean, so it's not only CVM, it's across all the organizations. The team is building the team is something that is crucial.
Yeah. So I think it's interesting that you mentioned, and this is one of the reasons why we are doing this podcast, is that it is a profession that is very invisible. It's some kind of part of marketing, yeah. but finding new people, raising them, educating them is not done. So yeah. most of the companies end up creating some sort of training programs.
Yeah.
And I know that you did Tele2 Data Academy. So maybe you can share a little bit about that and why did you do it? How did you convince management to invest? And was it worth at the end?
It's. I think it is really worth it. Few things that we've managed to done is, first of all, why we were doing this. We were hiring some people at the same time while hiring one. You need to invest lots of hours into this training, right? Mm-hmm. And you are not 100% sure if that's going to be successful after you take someone who is completely new in this area.
So sort of one person still needs education. Why not yeah. 10?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. We spend almost the same time. I think this is the matter of scale. If you mm-hmm. need more than one person, that you should already consider something that you're able to club, mm-hmm. because you're taking your valuable resource from day-to-day operations. Then maybe it's better to share it for all. There's also, you don't have hundreds of people in CVM usually. Yeah, yeah. So you have one person who is much stronger in one field, and there is someone who is stronger in the other mm-hmm. part of the world. So if you can combine that knowledge all together, it's again another gain for you to make sure that someone is trained the best you can. Second thing, of course, is for me personally was you were also developing your team internally. Mm-hmm. As I started alone, I was growing this this business line, I would say, this team mm-hmm. from day one. And people who were joining more of a special roles, they were also growing and they needed to have some of development themselves. So I think mm-hmm. when you train, you also learn how you're going to train.
There's this saying that you yeah. learn when you start
yes,
teaching.
Yes, exactly.
It's very much true.
And both leadership skills that yeah. that you can train, and ultimately, when you have 10 good candidates you can choose from,
yeah.
It's always better than to choose from one, of course.
Yeah. So you're saying is basically the business case was very obvious.
And employer branding was something that's cherry yeah. on top.
Okay,
I think we were one of the first to do so. So mm-hmm. we got some publicity that was also mm-hmm. some attention that drove to us just for that. And then mm-hmm. I think that was also a little bit of the leftovers for I wouldn't even say it's a leftover. It's something that you get back to the country as well. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think that people
bringing
who were
people back.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. I think that people who were attending that we mm-hmm. were having really good experience. Mm-hmm. Even if we didn't stay that,
and
I'm really happy that we are still continuing in that field. Mm-hmm. And this knowledge is something that if not in telco, that it can definitely be used in mm-hmm. other business part.
So yeah, I think that's a very interesting kind of, you make it sound very easy, but was it actually easy to make it happen?
Of course. Yeah. No, I think when you have a decent flavor of humor, yeah. when you have, you know, when you take the challenges with a smile in your face, it's always better.
Okay.
I think mm-hmm. that this is where it... we had a saying in our MBA that the harder it is, the easier it gets.
Yeah.
So,
okay. So yeah, it was damn hard, but great fun.
It's fun. It's fun. Yeah, I would say, and convincing that and doing it as what's never been done before.
Yeah.
I think that's someone that's also helping the team to stick together and make it happen. It's much easier to have a challenge that's outside of the organization than to have a challenge with
nobody is responsible for it, so you can kind of straight away run with it. Yeah,
but
I think that's nice.
As you mentioned, I think the trickiest part here is to be able to communicate and to convince that this is something that is able to drive the business.
Mm-hmm.
And the perception of the acquisition versus retention, mm-hmm. it's still usually not too balanced.
Mm-hmm.
I think we...
So too much emphasis on acquisition.
Usually it is.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it is. And this is because there are lots of nitty-gritties that you are not even able to explain to that extent. Or it takes too much time. And people who are doing that, we are more focusing on the real thing than trying to communicate that part. So it's again the importance of CVM that we have in the organization. It's a little behind to what the real value we are creating.
I think it's a super super important point that you are bringing, because even the academy was still called DIT Academy, not CVM Academy. There is mislabeling happening around. But maybe I want to bring back one more point around creating value from data. I think there is a lot of emphasis on data and quite a lot of questions then, okay, but how do we create value from data? Because that is not, there is not enough emphasis on that. Do you ever have struggles with creating value from data?
No.
Or is this a no-brainer? I mean, the moment you know how to do it, it just works. Or do you really have such a hard time finding value?
Data itself has no value.
Exactly.
It has... unless you are able to sell that for the B2B part.
And it's cheap as well. So.
Yeah, and it, but when it comes to why you are doing this, data is only the tool.
Yeah.
And even your insights that you are coming with, it's only the tool. The value that you are able to create is how you execute on those insights.
Yeah.
And I think this is something that is the biggest challenge. It's not only to find out some good insight or to come with the model that's making your prediction 30 times better than the average, which to me is...
It's okay.
What's
the value?
Yeah. So, but I think the beauty of CVM is that you're able to measure your value. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to your campaigns, you are always able to measure the impact of your revenue and churn. It takes some time, but definitely you have some hardcore findings there. And if you are, your insights, your models, your predictions were okay, then you definitely see you'll see it.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about this part, because I think this is a super important part of CVM overall and measuring your results. I think for me, it's one of the most exciting things, because you get to be tested yourself.
Yeah.
How good are you?
Yeah.
And this is very, very nice thing. Of course, very disappointing when you are wrong.
Yeah.
It happens all the time. But still, when you are right, then it's a great thing.
Yeah.
But let's talk a little bit about, is it easy or actually hard to measure impact? Can you structure experiments in such a way that you get a clear answer in a telco environment?
In short term, no. In short term, you can never believe, you know, 1 month impact is nothing to me, unless, you know, the your revenue came from zero to nothing and your control group stayed the same.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. then it's fine. But
so
if
control group is always a part of what you do, or sometimes?
It's, I would say 90% of the time it should be there.
Okay.
The question here is, when you try to put some CVM into the ATL, then it's a little different, because if you have some offers that are valid for all the customers, that means it's more of a difference within the offer part than can be managed around. When it comes to measurement itself, it's, yes and no. It's easy in a way that you have all the data behind. The question is, you need to understand what is the real behavior pattern that you were able to change. If you are not changing any behavior for that particular customer, then there is no impact. And when it comes to CVM itself, I only believe in long-time retention. I mean, in proactive retention rather than trying to get back to the customer that already have the SIM in the rubbish bin.
Yeah. So what's the shortest time you should expect results in? You know, so we always hear people, please give me results in 1 month, 3 months.
Yeah.
What's the realistic time frame to see business impact?
I would say, if you're talking long-term retention, I would at least keep it for 3 months. But that's a minimum to me. Usually it's even 6 months. So you still need to have proper routine to be able to come back and to measure it again.
So measuring for 6 months after you do something.
But you should measure it all the time, I would say. It's just your conclusions can only be done in a much longer period.
Okay.
Of course, you're able to identify if offer does work or not from the next minute when you launch it. And this is definitely the biggest indication that you have this target and control group thing that that you are able to
see. So sort of conversion rates and then
revenues and So and the one of the most important parts is if your usage has changed. So if it's only one thing that I have subscribed to the biggest data pack, that does not necessarily say that I've started to consume more, right? So that's only a short-term indication that that you're able to change, but maybe in long-term that doesn't change anything. But again, there's lots of measurement, and this measurement does require lots of interpretation as well. And sometimes people tend to overplay with that, right? So it's because of, you know, trying to get some short, quick wins and trying to present something that's not even true yet. Which I think in this part of the world, when you have all the data that, that you need, it's something that it's easy to play, right?
I think that's the maybe slightly annoying part of it, that, you know, statistics you can make, I mean, they can lie easily, right? But I'm pretty much mostly interested in how easy it is to get to the truth. So maybe you can tell, just to wrap this topic, about what percentage of effort do you spend on measurement, actually? And with this sort of evaluation, is this, you know, more like 5% or bigger?
I would say it's at least one third of it.
Okay, so to huge effort.
Yes. But it again, it comes of all the infrastructure that we have. In some cases, it's much easier. In some cases, it's something that does require lots of manual work. So as soon as you can automate all the post-campaign efforts, it becomes more of a quick look rather than trying to pull out all the data again and try to stratify the things that that you launched. So, but I think, and usually we tend to spend less. But then you end up doing things that might not be the best for your business.
So one topic I wanted to touch on, and we kind of talked about it, but not the direct way, is there is a general understanding that personalization is quite important in CVM. Maybe for someone who has not done any personalization, maybe you can explain why it is important, why it works. So why it's a good idea.
So if you take I know 100 dogs that would weigh the average 5 kilos, and you put some coat for that dog that would fit some decent size, that's one thing, right? But when you want to take a giant Saint Bernard, what the breed is, this would not simply fit. I think this is the easiest of examples.
And so customers are... you're saying is that there is actually vast differences in the customer base. I remember I was once shocked to find a person who spent 10 times more than average every single month. I was like, who is this person? How can he spend so much? But most likely, I mean, some kind of executive traveling, really high income person. And then you have another one who's maybe spending 100th of that. So really, there is huge diversity in the base.
Different backgrounds, different customer needs, different type of usage behavior, different phone that you have. It's already impacting what does this customer really need. And the guy who is spending thousands of euros, and he simply doesn't care about telco. For him, it's more important to make it work rather than just to, you know, optimize the spending. So of course, your approach to this customer will be very much different than the one who is almost almost spending a euro or a penny.
So then how do you end up not having 1 million segments? What's the sweet balance to manage?
Ultimately, you will end up having a million segments, but then you would not treat them as a segment. It's more of the action, right? So this action, we are moving towards the direction that there will be lots of different personalized actions that you want your customer to make, or your customer wants it from you. And we are getting to the real time.
So sort of next best action in real time.
Yes, and definitely.
To every single customer
definitely
would be the vision to go
with
for.
With all the consents to have in the background, of course. But when it comes to where the CVM moves, is a real time with mm-hmm. as much background for this particular customer as possible mm-hmm. to be able to identify his need.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think that's a very, very vivid explanation of where the data-driven state of the market yeah. is right now.
Yeah.
Maybe you can comment a bit about pricing, how pricing connects to this, because this is a really tricky area, right? You also can't end up having a million bundles. So how important is price in all of that? Or do you now design offers that are more having other things besides the price?
Of course, offers not only the price. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to telco, I think it becomes data, right?
Okay.
It becomes something that you can change, you can offer extra. Validity, of course, is something that, mm-hmm. Especially for the prepaid hand, mm-hmm. something that you can change for this particular customer, because if you know you're traveling for 2 days only, yeah. you might not offer the package that will be 7 days valid, and this mm-hmm. will only fit that particular customer.
So you're basically building more personalized pricing as well as part of it.
Yeah, and again, when we come to the ATL, ATL is more of a ceiling that you have,
yeah.
right? So you will not ask your customer to pay more yeah. than your ATL pricing
yeah.
is. So it's more how big is this gap versus the particular customer's need
mm-hmm.
is something that CVM will, you will enable to close the deal
mm-hmm.
and to identify this ladder, how much you are able to get from this customer
mm-hmm.
in order to serve his need.
Mm-hmm.
And then it comes churn versus upsell.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to consider both in order to make sure that you are not losing any potential
mm-hmm.
benefits.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think this is...
It's quite simple, right?
Yeah, it's pretty simple. I mean, if you think about the classical business to business, individual negotiations to find the right price and
yeah.
the conditions. Here it's the same.
So it comes.
You just apply it to,
it comes to the
every
math.
Single person, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's really challenging. But maybe you can comment a little bit on the maturity of the tooling in this area. So obviously, to work with this huge number of different rules and campaigns is a challenge. Is the tooling today satisfactory globally, what you have seen, what you have worked with, or not? It's a struggle.
I think you are the best to answer this.
But I'm just really interested in the opinion, because sometimes you have these very nice tools, but really you can also work around in many other ways.
Mm. Definitely, everything you do, it can be done manually,
mm-hmm,
right? But
mm-hmm.
when it comes to this type of personalization, simply you need too many people,
okay,
because
yeah.
that would serve individual customer yeah, yeah, need yeah. On the kind of real-time basis.
Yeah.
That's why you need to automate.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty picky when it comes to the tooling.
Mm-hmm.
So every tool I've seen, I see lots of potential to be developed.
Mm-hmm.
I still see lots of unexploited areas, lots of integrations that are still missing.
Yeah.
And personally, I think we have to spend a lot of time and invest a lot of time in this to make sure that we are taking the right solution there.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that it takes some time to implement, sometimes it takes more than a year. So
yeah.
That makes your choice even harder.
Yeah.
For me, this is the worst that CVM, the worst part of CVM is mm-hmm. that you need to spend lots of extra time in order to make your needs
work. Easier.
Work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this area will still develop quite fast.
Yeah.
Maybe some quick wins and quick solutions there, but me personally, I haven't seen the tool that would cover all the needs from day one, and that will be a more of a plug and play type
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
That requires lots of things that will be custom made, and this customization comes with the legacy that telcos
yeah,
usually
takes time
have.
Time and cost money.
Which is another hard sell, I would say,
yeah.
Where we know that we never handle big projects easily.
Yeah, yeah. It's sort of like, you know, having an accounting function, but you're not giving them the software.
Yeah.
Do it manually. I mean, this is the state of the CDM today. It's really tragic.
Not in all the case, I would say. I mean, I know some best-in-class operators that were coming and looking what we've been developing previously. Said, oh, okay, this is more of a world-class type of thing. But at the same time, when you are operating in that field, you always know what you want to tweak in order to make your team spend resource or time where it's really is valuable, rather than to repeat the same thing over and over again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about data. So we mentioned this a lot, and maybe one question for you in terms of tips and tricks. So you said that there is a lot of data points that you have in the telco, and I think it's absolutely overwhelming. What is your recommendation to do data analysis when you're looking at some big data set? First, maybe it's a full segment. What do you do? What's your method?
Yeah, so it's at the beginning, it's quite simple. Mm-hmm. You want to understand where this customer comes from. So you have a little bit of the customer background in terms of
acquisition history.
How old is he, and what is the product purchase history? Okay. I think this is something that you know for sure, because that's been your business interaction with this particular customer, and it tells you a lot.
So you basically kind of try to play back the story.
Yeah, and then you see, does this product actually fit his consumption?
Okay.
So when it comes to telco, you only have few of the consumption parts, right?
Yeah.
How many data, how many minutes, how many SMS, how many extra products that did one buy. And then you see if there is a match already.
Mm-hmm.
If your customer needs are not matching what he's buying, or he's buying something too often, you already know this is either the potential risk or potential upsell value. Then it becomes a little more interesting when it comes to extra things you know about this customer, about his digital behavior, about his preferred channels, about basically where you can put this offer in order to make it work. And things coming from outside of the market would only make this impact if your competition just launched the offer that would exactly fit this particular customer needs. You already know this is a risk, right?
Or so you do this sort of like intuitively, or do you have some kind of check mark or some methodology checklist to go through?
One of the things that we've been developing is the same next best offer, right? So next best offer already tells you what kind of product you want to offer for this particular customer, knowing his previous behavior. This is something that's...
So sort of using next best offer or trying to implement it would even give you insight about what is good or bad with the customer base.
Definitely. And this next best offer should contain both the upsell potential and the risk potential. I think these are two key factors that, besides the customer's history that you're already able to track, his usage history, you are able to also put on top some you know, future forecast that might happen to this customer again. And if this customer is buying 10 iPhones in the past, maybe you would like to offer iPhone on top of it, right?
Yeah.
So that type of customer behavior is something that you would like to start with.
And do you work with the data yourself, like hands-on, or do you ask the team to look at
I used to.
So what's your current workflow?
No, recently I've been responsible for both acquisition and CVM, so CVM was something that was more of a
part of the job.
But I was really enjoying when I have to dig in and to look at the segments. So this is something when you also can contribute with your experience in order to tweak a little bit when it comes to the offering part. But again, when it comes to the team, I really encourage for someone to own that. So it's not me telling you should address this particular segment. It should be coming from the idea of where the growth should come from. So this growth should be in the mindset of CVM guy or a girl who will be dealing with that on a daily level.
So you mean some sort of business hypothesis, basically,
yes,
that they're trying
exactly.
to attach.
Yeah, and this business hypothesis is something that you want to test again if you are not sure about that, or my experience would tell something different. Of course, we are able to try it, right? So you can try it on 1,000 customers and see what's the impact immediately. Even hit rate would tell you if if there is a click there, and ultimately the churn would also tell.
Yeah, so I think what is very nice here, you kind of mentioned the tests, and many people still are stuck in this huge project transformation mindset. What is the CVM approach to kind of discovering the truth? Do you do many smaller tests? Do you always test something, or do you just
yes
do
and
it?
No?
Okay,
yes
so
and no. No, no.
Your secret.
Yeah, I think there is no one way to approach that, and it comes from your culture of the company. If you have a vision to be as fast as possible and as quick as possible, you take some risk and you deliver the message to
so
all the base.
So you don't need the CEO to sign off on the campaign?
It depends on the company, of course. Yeah, it depends on the company. I've been in different stages there, and I, of course, love the when you're able to execute yourself, because if you have that full trust that your P&L would be something that you always put on top,
Then
it's your choice, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And if you want to make it fast, if you want to make it slow, that totally depends on the situation. I've seen things we've done in half a day in ATL, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
And I've seen things that we are still testing for half a year and before we implement that for the whole of the base.
Yeah.
So there is no one answer to that, but I ultimately am a fan of making things life as fast as possible, because
sort
this
of
is
learn immediately.
There is only a way you're gonna get value is when you execute on things,
okay.
And then your experience should be your leverage to make sure that you are not missing on something.
So for people who don't maybe have a good appreciation of the speed and tempo of these things.
This is not the area.
How many do you launch per month? Like new concepts or new ideas? What's the expectation?
You're doing campaigns on a daily level. The question is how many
of them are you tweaking?
Yes, yeah. And how big is your effort in terms of, you know, if you have the proper tools to make them, you know, 5 or 10 different tests, because usually you're still having some limitations within your team, so you cannot ask for people to make 24 hours a day. So at the same time, when it comes to tests, I would say it's more of a framework that you are addressing a particular segment needs in terms of retention, upsell, and customer experience. When you have that, and you have smaller segments within that framework, then you're good to go. And if you are finding some new things on your way, saying, okay, we need to split that segment into the two, because there are actually two different segments within one.
Yeah,
that's one thing. Next best offer is something that you are just, you know,
changing all the time.
It's life. It's life, and it's something that is taking a new data feed on a regular basis. Real time, most,
I think it's impossible for people not in this area to appreciate. It's almost like, you know, keyword advertising on Google or things like that. We're basically tweaking every single moment, right?
Yes,
it's live, and you are optimizing as you go. Yeah.
So. If I was never a big fan to count the numbers of the campaigns, because it does not tell you. I mean, there should not be a goal to launch that many campaigns.
Yeah.
It's more about the customer need. You have to address that particular customer need as fast and as good as possible.
But I think the whole personalization thing drives this big increase in number of campaigns, and it's quite okay to have 400 things live at the same time, because they're just targeting many smaller micro segments, and this is normal.
Yes.
I think this is very big difference from the traditional marketing, where you say I have one campaign live instead of 400. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So very, very good insights there. I would like to ask about differences between, let's say, European telecom landscape, so like Baltics, versus Qatar. What are the notable things that you can share?
Yeah, so
what's different?
telcos are quite similar as a business, but I think what's unique in the Middle East is that you have a real diverse customer base there.
Okay.
Diversity means, I mean, the segmentation first of all comes as a nationality, right?
Okay. Language, nationality, and so on.
I can't remember by heart, but I'm sure there will be more than 100 different nationalities within one customer base.
Okay.
20 of those will play a really significant part.
Okay. I think that's a big, interesting topic for Baltics. Maybe not so new for UK and other large markets with diverse inhabitants, but here for sure, yeah.
And compared to Baltics, you barely use our language than your Lithuanian, sometimes English, sometimes our. But usually it's quite straightforward, and you are finding segments within one big segment.
Yeah.
And there, there is no better way to define segments there rather than taking the nationality yet. Mm-hmm.
Does the behavior differ inside the segment?
A lot.
Yeah.
A lot. Okay. And even within, I would take India as an example. It's a big diaspora in mm-hmm. Qatar. It's the biggest population actually from all the nationalities. Mm-hmm. Even within Indian segment, you have like 20 different languages in one country,
And
you are not even sure that your message will be delivered and
understood.
In regular Hindi.
Yeah.
So this is very much different.
A whole other level of personalization
needed. Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And even within that, there are customers that are really, you know, cost conscious, and we are saving every penny.
Yeah.
And there are people who are really premium customers that are having completely different needs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you cannot take one segment as a whole.
Yeah.
Identifying that, knowing previous, would tell you a lot, but also knowing what is the potential for this particular customer, it's again another cut, right?
So
and ultimately you'll get to a segment of one. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to a general approach, I'm talking about ATL pricing as well, you still need to consider that, and there is there is a vast amount of different products that we were catering for. I think mm-hmm. the biggest difference there is that product catalog that we have at the back end is much bigger than you'll find it here.
Yeah, but I think it has been a trend in the telcos for some years, right? So they're adding more and more and more products to the overall portfolio, things like insurance and so on, right? And then the pricing as well is differentiating. So do you see that as a trend that will continue, or it has some kind of natural limits?
I think at least in the ATL, mm-hmm. it will become more simple.
Okay.
I think the simplicity for the customer to choose initially mm-hmm. is really important, and that can be also your competitive edge as well. Mm-hmm. If you are there to serve your CVM, then mm-hmm. it's a whole iceberg underneath.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think it will be there because then you will be able to identify the specific customer needs. Mm-hmm. So you will try to, you know, close the gaps with your CVM mm-hmm. for ATL pricing that might be there.
So kind of very interesting combination, super simple ATL and then really diverse and flexible
That would be my initial approach. Of mm-hmm. course, it can depend on market to market, and having mm-hmm. five products in ATL and in the Middle East mm-hmm. would simply not work.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
even as your first choice,
yeah.
it should be much more to cater for. But ultimately, the idea is to make it really simple, and then to make it, because customers at the end of the day, they would not care how many products you have in your backend.
Absolutely, yeah.
This is your headache, right? To make sure that it's still relevant and it's not having too much legacy, because that will stop mm-hmm. other things to be developed. But when it comes to the simplicity, customers should have both ATL and BTL pricing mm-hmm. as simple as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
and
that's
individual on individual level, even you have thousands of them in your backend, you only see one, two, or three in the CVM that would be tailor made for you.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Okay, I think that's a super good way of explaining what the landscape looks like. So maybe as we are ending, nearing the end of this conversation, I have our traditional questions. And the first question is, what's your proudest moment in the career? You know, something you launched and then it went through the roof. Can you share?
I think it's the whole journey that I'm really grateful for the people I was working with. So having the team that I think I've managed to turn quite well with the team. So
inside the team as well.
Yeah, okay. So I think that's really important that you have someone you can really trust, and I think this is the biggest win. We had a friendly chat with a friend of mine who was saying, like, it's not a matter of what exactly you do and how exactly you do it, but it's important with whom you are doing it.
The other people. Yeah.
And this is what actually makes this experience and journey, you know, joyful.
Yeah. Very nice.
You can name some wins that have to become number ones. But I think it's about the progress and about your people that are surrounding you.
So. Very good. Yeah. So next question is the opposite. What's the biggest failure that now you maybe laugh at, but then it was not so funny?
I recall two.
Okay, please.
So one was kind of funny. That's happened here in Lithuania. I don't think that would happen in Middle East by no means. But it's I received a message that says competitor, and it got really aggressive off over there. And you know, we were really, you know,
fighting.
We were really on a hot pan. So giving us something that was, you know, trying to beat our price perception is, you know, it's like a red flag for the bull.
Yeah.
So and we are acting really fast. I immediately checked with the team. So what's happening over there? What kind of offer is it? Like crazy, like half of the price. We have to check it. So and we don't have even the consent for me to send that.
Yeah.
So like maybe we are spamming all the customers and stuff like that. So I immediately send that to the lawyers and put the team on the action, saying we have to think on the response immediately. Like the team was laughing at the time. That was April Fool's Day.
Oh wow!
So that was a big joke from my team actually.
That's, so they got you.
This was a little too late. So our legal was already submitting the file to regulators, saying that competitor is not is not behaving nicely. So it was a good laugh for our competitors as well. But yeah, it was the second one was maybe not that funny. It's more about making things that are you know, down to reality. We were closing down some prefix basically we had small base in a fixed line, which we were phasing out, and we just did it by the book, and we sent out the closure letters for all the base, which was not a fresh customer base, and we ended up touching some customers that were not even there with us anymore.
Yeah.
So that was something that I was took as a big lesson to make sure.
So you kind of erroneously sent messages to people who were even no longer with the company.
Okay, they were not longer in working in this planet. So.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So that was something that you just want to make sure that something you do or that definitely
testing the target group is important.
You find other ways to touch them than simply send letters. So. This is again data, right?
Yeah.
Making sure that's fresh and then it's
quality. Okay. So maybe you have some book recommendation, podcast recommendation for people who would like to understand more about this area, maybe deepen their experience. What are your sources of inspiration?
I know some old one that's called Space Race.
Okay.
This is about the efficiency of marketing when it comes to media investment.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's still relevant.
Okay.
And I honestly think if Nobel Prize will be given to mathematicians, someone who will be able to you know, make sure this model actually works should be getting that.
Okay.
This is something that's, you know, constant topic, and I never see a model that actually works.
So, still relevant.
Yeah, I think it's still relevant. Another one I would recommend is quite recent one. It's called Perform. Mm-hmm. It's actually written by Startup Wise Guys founders. That it's more about the startup. How it's really basic book that would tell you about how you want to build a new company. Uh-huh. But I think lots of things you can take it from there to make sure that your team is also fitting that and it has that spirit of a new founded company.
So
I really like the way it's been presented. I think it's a great one to share.
Thank you very much. So yeah, great to have you here, and I hope everyone finds your insights super valuable as I found them today.
Thanks, Sharon.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for listening to CVM Stories. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a review. You can also ask us a question about a particular customer value management challenge you have at work. We will happily ask our experts to tackle your challenge in a future episode.